So I'm Jane Heffernan, and I'm at York University, which is just in the northern part of Toronto. But this is work that I did with Matt Keeling at the University of Warwick in the UK. And what the goal of this work was, well, when I first started working with Matt, we wanted to be able to take an in-host model that includes the effects of waning immunity and see how that affects how disease can be spread in a population. And we chose to work on measles so that we could ignore evolution. Okay. Also, we chose to work on measles because it's still a significant cause of mortality and morbidity. It's a leading cause of death in young children. And here you can just see a map of cases. This is a 2003 map, so it's a little bit dated. But the important thing to know here is that it's still a significant cause of mortality and morbidity, despite the fact that there is a very effective vaccine out there. Another problem with the vaccine, though, is that even though we do have this very effective vaccine, because of the scary things that people believe surround this vaccine, we do have quite a few problems now with vaccine uptake in some developed countries. And one of those countries is the UK, where vaccine uptake has really gone down because people are scared that it is actually linked to autism. Another interesting thing about measles is the temporal dynamics. Before the vaccination program, it was on a biennial cycle. So here just we have some graphs of measles in different cities in the UK. And on the Canadian side, we also see that we have these periodic cycles. And then in the 1960s, we brought in the vaccine. And you can see that our rates per 100,000 population decreased significantly, but we still do have some outbreaks, even though we actually in Canada have like a 92% coverage with measles vaccine. In July 2008, we had a pretty big outbreak in Toronto. And it actually started in March in 2008. And it started, I believe it was at the Science Center. And because we had a science fair of high school students, and there was an index case that came in with measles and infected other people at the science fair. So the outbreak was declared over in July, I believe, of the same year. But in Toronto, there were a total of 26 cases in the TPH, which is the Toronto Public Health. There were also more cases just outside the Toronto area, about 30. And of the ones that are in the Toronto area, there were two people that got infected, one person that got infected had two confirmed doses of the vaccine. Seven people had one confirmed dose of the vaccine, and 10 people had zero doses, and then there were 8 people that are unknown. So unlike the outbreak that John talked about a couple days ago, we actually do have people here that had the vaccine that did get measles. So this shows that measles immunity, when you get the vaccine, can wane over time. And so we're interested in looking at waning immunity in these cases. In 2008, the USA experienced its largest measles outbreak in more than a decade, and it spread to 15 states. And measles has become endemic in the UK 14 years after transmission was halted, and this is because people are not getting the vaccine. Vaccine uptake has greatly decreased. Okay. So you can decide to look at waning immunity in terms of an SIRVS model. Okay. So here we're looking at an SIRV model on the left, and we're including vaccination, and we're saying that we have a waning rate. And so on the far left here, that our waning rate is very, very small. So it's like having lifelong immunity. And we can see that we only have to increase our waning rate slightly to actually get to show that our vaccine is totally ineffective. Okay. In in an SIRV model where our vaccination is lower than our critical vaccination threshold, this PC, we can calculate what our infecteds are at the infected equilibrium. And here we have different areas, so A, B, C, D, and they correspond to A is kind of like an SIR model with vaccination with lifelong immunity. B is like an SIR model where vaccine has no effect at all. And then C and D are more like an SIS model. Okay, but you can see here that we're not actually capturing any of the temporal dynamics. But what we want to actually do is take a model of measles in a population, delineate the people by their immune status, and compare this to the SEIR model, and see if we can get some similar results, and also see if we can get some temporal dynamics. We're not going to include seasonal forcing, and I'll talk about that at the very end. So this is a picture of your immune system. So in order to delineate the population by immunity or immune status, we need to have an idea of how measles affects your immune system and how you acquire immunity through vaccination or through natural infection. So I'm going to give you a little bit of an introduction to the immune system. Then we're going to derive an in-host model. We're going to see how the in-host model gives information for certain parameters in the epidemiological model, and we'll go from there. So this is your immune system. You can see that you have lymphatics and lymph nodes, your kidney, your spleen, your bone marrow, and your thymus play very important roles. Your lymph nodes have structure as well. So your immune system has structure, your lymph nodes have structure, and different cells actually live in different parts of your immune system and even in different areas of your lymph node. Okay. So you'd think that this is nice and spatial, that we could use this as a spatial model, but we can actually use homogeneous mixing in terms of measles because measles gets into the blood, and so we can assume that once it's into the blood, it's a well-mixed system. Okay, so here are some different cells that are important in the immune system. And so a T cell, for example, right here, this is actually the main driver of your immune system, and the reason why HIV is so bad is because HIV infects it. But for measles, measles infects peripheral blood mononuclear cells, of which T cells are a component. Okay. So what is measles? It's transmitted through direct contact with nasal or throat secretions or by airborne transmission. It's an acute infection, which means that you clear it. And the immune response to measles includes both the humoral immunity and your cell-mediated immunity. Humoral meaning antibodies and B cells, and cell-mediated meaning these T cells that are the main drivers. They also include CD8 T cells that go off and kill infected cells. So here is a curve showing you the pathogenesis of measles in a host. And so you can start off where you get exposure, you have a small increase in infection, then it greatly decreases, you get a peak at about 14 days of infection, and then the immune system actually starts slightly before this peak occurs, but it's detectable a little bit later, and you can see you get this increase in your immune system after measles is actually eradicated. And you can think of this as acquiring immunity or memory against the infection. With measles, you're not infectious, or you don't show symptoms until the peak in your pathogenesis curve, so it's between 12 to 14 days. But you're actually infectious 3 to 4 days before that peak, and you're infectious 3 to 4 days after it. Okay. So we're going to include the effects of memory in our in-host model. And this is just an example showing you how if you have a primary immune response, you've never been exposed to a pathogen before, you first have the entry of the microorganism, then you get establishment of infection, then you get the induction of the immune response, then the immune response really starts to take effect, and you get this decrease, which is because of the adaptive immune response. And then after the pathogen is cleared, you get the development of immunological memory. So if you're exposed to the pathogen again, you get an apparent reinfection, maybe soon after you've had it, and this really just boosts your immunity, okay, or your immune memory. And then later on, maybe years later, you get exposed to it again, and you get no reinfection at all. You really just get a boost in your immunity. But this depends on how much memory you have around when you've been exposed. Okay. So in terms of measles, we wanted to include the effects of immune memory. So we're going to have this memory class of cells in our immune system. Also, in terms of measles, it has been found that antibodies and B cells really just help stave off infection, so they prevent infection from coming in. But when someone actually does get infected, it's the T cell mediated immunity that's important. And so here we're going to have naive T cells. These are CD8 T cells. When these CD8 T cells are activated, which is proportional to the virus in the body, they become activated T cells, and they can proliferate, which means divide. They proliferate, and they can go and kill infected cells. So here we have healthy peripheral blood mononuclear cells. They're born at a certain rate. They die at a certain rate. They can become infected by the virus, but only infectious virus. And Q here gives the probability that you have an infectious virion. You produce infected cells through this infection process. These infected cells die at an accelerated rate compared to the healthy cells, and they produce virus at a rate K. Virus can be cleared, okay, by the immune system, and this is mainly due to antibodies and other components of the immune system. These infected cells can be killed by these activated CD8 T cells, and these activated CD8 T cells can actually only divide up to about 7 times in their life. And after about the 7th or 8th division, they decide whether they're going to die or they can become memory cells. And in their lifetime, they can only kill up to a certain number of infected cells in their lifetime as well. So they can become memory cells. Memory cells also become activated due to the proportional to the virus in the system. And memory cells are activated at a much faster rate than these naive cells. And so that's the reason why if you have immunity or memory, your body can react much faster to a disease and clear it, and you won't even know that you're infected. Okay, so we made this model of in-host measles, just the same populations here, naive infected PBMCs, virus, naive activated and memory CD8 T cells. And we can find the basic reproductive ratio, where here we just have the number of virus particles that an infected cell makes in its lifetime multiplied by the probability that those infectious virus particles can infect in their lifetime. Because these virus particles actually go inside a cell when they infect, so they're lost to the population. Okay, so using this model, we have very similar characteristics to what I told you before. We have peak in infection around day 12 to 14. Our virus peaks around the same time. Our PBMCs decrease, and then they start to increase as our naive cells are decreased as they become activated. Our activated cells increase due to proliferation and activation of B cells. So this is primary infection. And then after infection is close to being cleared, we get these memory cells. And then the memory cells greatly increase, and then they start to decrease because these cells can actually die, and that's the waning immunity that I refer to. Okay, some interesting things about this. So if you look at an individual in a population where measles is endemic, you can here you have someone that got infected at around age 1, they got infected again around age 5, but they had very small disease, so this might have been just a boost in the immune system, okay? So here we have our boosts in our memory. So every time you're exposed, you get a boost in your memory, but if you're not exposed for a long period of time, like so say you leave elementary school and you get away from those vectors of this childhood disease, then when you're older, and say you're 25 and your first child goes off to school, your first child can come home with measles, and then you can get quite a large infection, and this could actually be a subclinical infection. And you can get a very similar scenario if you do vaccine. So here I'm giving this patient a big dose of vaccine virus, which is live and attenuated. So it's a high level of virus, but you still get a very low level of infected cells. And this is all not, like, so these people would not be infectious. Okay? So then you get the second dose at age 5. You get exposed during school at the same times as the previous person. And then you get these boosts in memory, and your memory here is actually very similar in magnitude to what you had if you had infection and then infection exposures again. And then again, your child goes off to school, and they can bring home measles, and you can get a subclinical infection. And subclinical means that you don't show symptoms, but you can transmit the disease. Okay. So things that we want to know from this in-host model to be able to give information to our population-based model is what's the quanta expelled by an infected person? So infected people expel quanta, which is defined as an infectious dose of measles. So this relates to transmission between individual hosts, but we know that it's expelled through the respiratory tract from the lungs, and we have no data on the lungs. So we decided not to include lung infection in our model. Instead, we just based our expelled quanta on what's in the blood, because what happens when you're infected with measles is you get measles into your lungs, it goes into the blood, it circulates, goes back into your lungs, and then it gets expelled. So we're going to assume that it's proportional or may even have a slight delay to what's actually happening in the blood. We want to get the definition of asymptomatic infection. We want to figure out the development of immunity with different initial levels of memory at the time of exposure. We want to figure out the start time and length of the infectious period for different initial levels of this immunity. And we want to quantify the level of infection for different initial levels of immunity as well at the time of exposure. Okay, so if we take a person who's totally naive to measles, this is this very top curve, we can get that infection curve that I showed you before where we get the peak at around day 14. Okay? If we allow this person to have 2 memory cells per microliter of plasma at the time of infection, then they follow this second curve. And then here we go all the way down to 18. Okay, so if this person has 18 memory cells per microliter of plasma, then they get this very small level of infection, and you can see that our peak moves slightly to the left and it's decreased. Okay, so that gives us our level of infection due to immunity at the time of exposure. But we can take this curve and figure out, so we know that R0 is around 17 for measles, and we know that you're infectious about 3 to 4 days before you show your symptoms at this peak, and you're infectious about 3 to 4 days after. So we can take this area here, and that's bounded by this red line and the blue curve here. We can take this area, and we can say that this represents an R0 of 17. Okay. So we can also take this point here and assume that this is a threshold that you have to make in order to become infectious. So we take the same threshold and we find it on our different curves. So this is if you have 5 memory cells at the time of exposure. This is if you have 10. And we take this area, compare it to this one, and we find an R0 for an individual that has this number of memory cells. And then we find an R0 for someone that has this number of memory cells. And we can keep on going. We can also take this curve, this point here. This is where you start to show symptoms. We can take this triangle and we can calculate the area under the curve here, we say that that is the amount of infection that you need in order to show symptoms. And so here, we'll say that up to about here, you can still show symptoms, but here your symptoms might be mild. But here, this whole curve doesn't even add up to this triangle of area, so you say that this person has subclinical infection. Okay, so we can take all of our initial levels of immune memory, and we can find R0, and what we find is if you have greater than 14 memory cells per microliter of plasma, you will never transmit the disease. Okay, we also find that if you have more than 6 microliters of plasma, 6 memory cells per microliter of plasma, so these ones here will all be able to transmit subclinically. We also find through our model that if you have 0 memory at the time of infection, you get boosted to about 180 memory cells per microliter of plasma. If you have 50 at the time of infection, you'll only get boosted to about 140 cells per microliter of plasma. And this dip actually was very worrying to us in the beginning. But what we realized is that this dip is due to the fact that here, your memory cells are so effective in eliminating the virus quickly that you don't get many activated CD8 T cells, so you're not going to actually get a huge increase in your memory. Okay? Whereas here, your naive cells, so here you have not enough memory to really take care of the infection on its own, and they have to wait for the naive cells to be activated as well to help them, and so that's why you get a not very good boost here. So we can now take all of this information that we found about when your infectious period starts, which is at this threshold here on your infected curve. We can we figured out R0, which is related to your transmission, your beta, in an FEIRS model. We also know that where this line intersects your blue curve gives you the end point of your infectious period as well. And you can think of this, the slope of this line is like your breathing rate of your infectious quanta, you're expelling it out of your lungs. So we get our beta, which is related to our R0. We get our alpha, which is our time from 0 to where this point intersects. We get our gamma, which is our infectious period. And then this is denoted by, this should be an I, and our I's go to a gamma P, where our P is our level of new immunity when I had I at the time of infection. So these people go to different RP classes, and then our memory cells can die, and so they die at a certain rate, but we also assume that because measles was biennial, before vaccination, we have this sigma, which gives us about every 2 years we have susceptibility again, but our susceptibility, so we go back to our SI classes, but we're still quite high in our immunity, so those people will actually, when they get infected, might just jump from our SI straight to our RP and not have to go through these classes. So anyone who has greater than 16 memory cells per microliter of plasma in these S classes are just going to jump from S to P, and they're going to skip this because they'll never be infected and they'll never be infectious. Okay, so we're using all this information from our in-host model to give us our parameters for our SEIRS model. Okay, so this is our SEIRS model. And we actually have about 2,000 equations, so this is not very nice to work with, but so we use numerical simulation to work with this model. But we can calculate our R0 based on our immunity at the time of infection, and it's very similar to what you'd expect. And actually, this can be very small, and so you can say that it's similar to what you'd find in an SIR model. So this is just what I showed you before to remind you that in a basic SIRV model where there's no immunity, your waning rate does not have to increase very much in order for your vaccine to be totally ineffective. And here we have an SIRV model, here's our prevalence of infection, and here we have an SIR model with lifelong vaccination, an SIR model with no lifelong immunity, and here these are similar to SIS models with vaccination and without vaccination. So we can take our model, and without vaccination, we can find our infected equilibrium. Okay? At our infected equilibrium, we can also find the distribution of immunity that our population has. So we have so many susceptibles, and so many of them have zero level of immunity, all the way up to about 200 memory cells per microliter of plasma. We have some exposed people, and this cutoff here is at that 15. So no exposed people can have memory greater than 15 at the time of exposure, because those people just go from S straight to R. So our infected and our infectious people also only go up to 15, and our recovered go all the way up, and then they start to decrease here. And this is where these people are coming from, our boosting of our susceptibles and our infectious classes. And then these are the people that we're losing that are going back to the susceptible class. Okay, so we can compare our model to the SEIR model, and our dotted line here. So this is our model. This dotted line is our S0, and the blue line is what you find for an SEIR model. And so what we're assuming here is that we have a population where immunity wanes about 80 years, so effectively it's lifelong, so that we can compare it to the SEIR model. And you can see that our E and our I classes, if we add them all up, agree to what the E and the I classes are for the basic SEIR model, the SEI. And then we have to change. This is our S0 class, and all of our other S classes, if we add them to our R classes, we get the same number of people in the R class. And this is our memory at the infected equilibrium, our distribution of our susceptible, exposed, infectious, and recovered people when waning immunity wanes over 80 years or is about lifelong. Okay. We can also take this model and take out birth and death to determine what happens if you have one person in a population where measles is endemic. And so we find that if we have what happens to this person, we find that that person comes in at birth. At age about 4 or 5, they get their first infection, which agrees to what is shown by Anderson and May. Then their immunity is then raised to high levels, decays over the host's lifetime. But from our infection rate, they actually can get exposed many, many times. They're expected to be infected and their immunity boosted about every 4 to 5 years. But in the tail of this distribution, we can actually get people that can be reinfected with measles and transmit and may show symptoms. However, most individuals will just experience boosts, since the time between exposure is relatively short, and this is seen as lifelong immunity. Okay, so that is our definition of lifelong immunity, is that there's enough infection around that your immune system's always being boosted. Okay, so if you take our model, so you can compare it to an SEIR model, and this is our model without waning immunity, and it's very similar to what you'd find in an SEIR model. And this is if your immunity wanes over about 80 years, so it's very similar up to about here, and then you get this change in age. And then if it only wanes over about 30 years, you get this change. And this is our proportion of symptomatic infected in the population. So if waning immunity occurs at a faster rate, then you get more symptomatic individuals in the population. And this is without vaccination. If you include vaccination, you can get, here's our percent vaccinated, and here are our memory cells per microliter of plasma at the time of in our susceptibles. And you can get, so this is if you have 30 years of immunity, and this is if you have about 80 years. But we find that if you include waning immunity during from infection or vaccination and a proportion of vaccination, that waning immunity can severely limit the effects of vaccination, and you can see that the prevalence of infection does not decrease linearly with vaccination coverage, whereas it would with a basic SEIR model or with the R model with lifelong immunity, you get this linear decrease, but for us, you don't get that. So waning immunity can really drastically affect the efficacy of your vaccine program. We also find that with high levels of vaccination, about greater than 70%, and moderate levels of waning immunity, about greater than 30 years, we can get large-scale epidemic cycles. And so here I'm showing 92% vaccination coverage, which is what we have in Canada, and we're assuming that immunity wanes over about 30 to 60 years, and we can get these epidemic cycles. So these are exposed and infectious populations, including asymptomatic and symptomatic. Okay, and we find that the period of these epidemics occurs between 4 to 8 years, depending on what our rate of waning immunity is. And that's actually what has been seen in some populations where vaccination is quite high. Okay. So here we're showing the maximum number of infectious cases in the epidemic cycle, so in that cycle. And we can see that they have very large relative amplitude to the infectious cycle. So we're also, here we're plotting the mean of infection, and here we're plotting the maximum. And so you can see that if you only look at mean infections, you're really going to drastically underestimate how much infection you're going to have in a population if you have high vaccination coverage. So in these periods here, in these years where we have this big epidemic cycle, there maybe might want to be thought of having a vaccine campaign to get all the people who are a little bit older. So here we're running our model without vaccination. Then at year 80, we include our vaccination program. The red line corresponds to lifelong immunity. Our blue line corresponds to 80 years of waning immunity on average. And our green line corresponds to about 30 years. You can see you can get drastic differences between the three. But you can also see that 80 years is close to lifelong immunity, and you can still get these outbreaks in the population. And over 30 years of immunity, you can get these periodic outbreaks, which occur, I can't remember, I think this is about every 4 years. And so here you can really see the magnitude of our number of symptomatic exposed and infectious people in the population. And one thing that was interesting about this is that in a lot of measles epidemics in a population where there is a pretty good coverage of the vaccine, we do see these little outbreaks that are happening. And it can't always be linked to an index case that came from somewhere else where measles is endemic or has an infection. And so, I don't know, this just shows that you can actually have measles in a population where it may be harbored by asymptomatic infection. So we can do a similar analysis where we only let our immunity wane to 6 memory cells per microliter of plasma, which means that any infections in the future will always be asymptomatic, and we get very similar results. We also, for fun, decided to look at the critical population size. We have a stochastic model where we have individuals in a population that have their own immune system. And we find that if we don't have a vaccination program, our critical population size for having endemic measles is between 200 to 500,000, which is very similar to what was reported by other measles studies in the past. And with the vaccine, we've found that you need approximately 10 million individuals in a population. And this is, so this says that if you don't include seasonal forcing and all these, and mixing between ages and everything, that if only waning immunity was important, then you could harbor measles asymptomatically in a population of only 10 million people. Okay, so some comments on the model. There are some drawbacks. We did not include humoral immunity in our model at all, and humoral immunity will help you stop infection from actually getting into the person. So that would decrease the number of cases that we have, because we also did not include seasonal forcing, but we comment on it saying that seasonal forcing is really likely to amplify any short-duration epidemic cycles exhibited by our unforced model, particularly when the unforced period is annual or multi-annual. And our unforced period is around 4 to 8 years. So we think that would really just amplify our effects. We did not include any age structure in our model because it would make it way more complex. But also, the mixing between different age groups is also not well known, so we wouldn't want to include this in our model until we really have much better knowledge about what's happening here. And the stochastic model is very computationally complex, and that population of 10 million that I just told you about, like, has taken ages to actually get that result, so I wouldn't put a lot of clout in it. And it's very difficult because you need to keep track of every individual's immune system. But if anybody has an agent-based model where they might want to include immune systems in all of their agents, other than yes, they have immunity and no, they don't have immunity, then I'd be interested in talking to them about this. So some future work would be to look at the effects of this in small populations, because small populations, you can think, would not be able to even harbor asymptomatic measles in this case. And so a small population, like say a little village of 10,000 people or town of 10,000 people, you probably won't have measles there, so people aren't getting boosted. So their immunity is waning. So if you do have a case coming from the city going into that town, you can get a pretty large outbreak. We also need to look at more about vaccine uptake, the age of infection versus the age of the individual, and networks, so a contact network or social network. And then the future work would be apply a very similar analysis to the flu. This work was done with Matt Keeling at the University of Warwick, and it was done on SharkNet, which is our shared hierarchical research computing network in Ontario. And it was also funded by NSERC, and these are the publications, the in-host model and the epidemiological model that came from this work.